Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
From CBSSports.com, Mike Exce. So, Mike, good morning. How you feeling?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right, Mike. Before we get to the meat and potatoes and stuff, we were just talking about the Dodgers going bananas, just signing Kirby Yates there. Even Steinbrenner was like, dude, no mas. We can't afford it. What does this say when the Yankees are tapping out a free agency where no one could spend like L.A. is doing? A lot of deferred money, though. Is this going to be the trend of the future for those who can afford that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, the owner of the Yankees saying they can't afford to do that's pretty rich. I mean, that I don't buy that for a second, you know.
Pun intended.
Yeah, since Steinbrenner took over, I think that was like in 2008 when he became the control person, he's kind of been talking about just, you know, keeping payroll down. The Yankees haven't ranked first in payroll, I think, since like 2012 or something, you know. Since the young Steinbrenner took over, he's kind of kept the Yankees away from like the runaway kind of spending like the Dodgers are doing. But I think the deferrals, I mean, they've always been around. The Dodgers are taking it to the extreme now with Ohtani and their other guys. But I mean, the Red Sox are still paying Manny Ramirez. Every year we kind of joke about Bobby Bonilla. There's a lot of these contracts around the sport. We just never really heard much about them. I do think MLB might look into something as a way to kind of limit this and kind of, I don't want to say it's a loophole because it's in the CBA. It says you can do it. It explains exactly how you calculate everything. So it's not a loophole. It's just something that was never really used much. And maybe they look to change that. I think you just change the way you calculate it for the luxury tax instead of getting rid of them. I'm pretty much like, you know, if they want to restructure their contracts, whatever they want, just change the way you calculate it. And I don't know, maybe they do something about this, but I'm not sure either side sees it as a problem. The player gets paid, you know, the owners kind of do things in a way that's financially better for them. I'm not sure it's as big of a problem as it's kind of made out to be.
Yeah, Orioles is going to be paying Chris Davis for a couple more presidential terms, if I'm not mistaken, on his deal from way back when. But speaking of a team, Mike, that does spend dough or wants to, it's the Mets. They can't seem to come to a deal with Pete Alonso. What's going on there?
Yeah, you know, I think he's going to end up back there eventually. It's a little kind of weird that they're playing such hardball with him. He's like this beloved homegrown player, and I thought the whole thing with Steve Cohen would be that, you know, he's going to sign the stars, and, you know, if the deals go bad, that's fine, because he can spend to paper over it, which is the kind of thing the Yankees did under George Steinbrenner all those years, and I don't know why they're playing such hardball there. And you look at their offseason, it's like, okay, they got Juan Soto, who was one of the best hitters in the world. They gave him this big record contract. And then they just kind of made all these, like, smaller moves. Like, they didn't really add a big-name pitcher. Their rotation's a little questionable. There's some age in their lineup, especially in the bottom of the lineup. It's like, you know, how much production are you really getting there? I mean, it's kind of a weird offseason where they got the one big star, and then that's really it. I don't know. I don't see where else Alonso's going to go, unless a team like one of those teams like the Angels or the Rockies, who don't always do like the smartest thing, come in with like a huge contract offer. I don't know where Alonso's going to end up. Maybe it's the Blue Jays who've been talking to him, but I just feel like there's such a match there. You know, the Mets, Alonso has value to them that he doesn't have to any other franchise. The fans love him. He's going to, you know, if he goes back there, he'll be their all-time home run leader. I think within this year he could get there, and he's going to like sell tickets and do things that another first baseman is just not going to do for them. And for the Mets, and for Alonso, you go back to the Mets, everybody loves you. There's no, like, you're not like the big name mercenary that they signed. You know, it just matches up off of both sides. Mets are playing hardball. I wouldn't be surprised if this is like one of those deals gets done like 3 weeks into spring training or something.
Mike Exce, CBSSports.com, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Woman Crush Wednesday, talking some baseball a couple weeks out from pitchers and catchers. All right, let's get to the American League East. And Mike Exce, of course, we're based in Baltimore. Of the American League East teams, which team is better, worse than they were? And all of them. Since the last time they played a game, Orioles got swept by KC, Yankees lose in the World Series, others up the track, if you will, horse racing term. Which teams are better? Who's worse on January 29th than they were at the end of September into October?
Yeah, I think the Yankees are worse, but they're not a bad team, obviously. I just think you lose someone like Soto, he's irreplaceable. And they had a pretty good offseason after that. I think they should have done more on their infield than, you know, bringing in kind of Paul Goldschmidt at the end of his career. And they haven't, they're missing like a second or third baseman. They need one or the other, and they just don't have it. So I think they're a worse team than they were at the end of last season. The Red Sox are clearly improved, I think, with Garrett Crochet, and I don't know what to expect from Walker Buehler. That's better than some of the guys they ran with there last year. And they have a lot of young players coming, and when you have a team that young, you know, you guys know what it's like in Baltimore. You could go from pretty bad to really good, like, in a year. And I think the Red Sox might be on the verge of doing something there. The Orioles, I mean, obviously you lose Corbin Burns, that's a big blow. And Charlie Morton at the end of his career. Sugano from Japan, I don't know how much what you're going to get from them. Are they really going to be like frontline guys you're going to start in a postseason series? Are they just guys who give you innings during the summer to get you through the season? You know, I feel like the universal kind of thought here is everybody would have liked to see the Orioles do more, maybe spend a little bit more money, get a, you know, a bigger name pitcher, get just a little bit more there. They're probably kind of in the same boat as they were last year. The question is that like weird offensive funk that they were in the last 3 months when Adley Rutschman didn't really hit and a lot of their offense just didn't perform to expectations. Was that just a blip? Is that going to happen again? Is that the new normal? I think they're just too talented for it to happen again. So I think if the Orioles are better, it's not going to be because they brought in a lot of great players this offseason. It's just the players they already have are just going to be better than they were last year.
All right, Mike, let's move to the National League Central real quick, where the Brewers, they traded their closer. They've lost others, of course, but you know they still maintain. I mean, they win their division by double digits last year. Yeah. Is the gap closing there? And if there's going to be a team that competes with Milwaukee for the championship, who's it going to be?
Yeah, I think the gap is closed a little bit. And the Brewers kind of have like a raise of the NL thing going on where they're the smartest team in the room and they do all these great moves and then they win more games than we expect. And then they lose immediately in the postseason to a team that operates the same way, just with more money. And I think the Cubs, if you just leave the rosters as they are right now, the Cubs might catch the Brewers right now. I think the Kyle Tucker trade was important for them. I like the depth they've added to their pitching staff and some of the younger guys they have that are just kind of like getting full-time lineup spots. The Cubs should be spending more than they are. You know, I think we talked about how Steinbrenner complaining, well, 2 weeks ago, Cubs owner Tom Ricketts said, you know, we can't spend like that, even though the Cubs are, you know, this massive team with this incredible following that has all sorts of revenue. They're just not spending like they could. And they spent more money, I think they'd be the clear favorite there. But I like the moves they've made, and I feel like the Reds have so many good young players that if things go right for them, maybe they're in the hunt there. You know, the Pirates, like, what a disappointment they are. Like, they've got Paul Skeens, and how much longer is he going to be this good? You know, I would have liked to have seen them do more this offseason. They kind of build an offense around them, and, you know, the Cardinals, I mean, like a week into the offseason, the front office, the general manager said, we're planning on a reset, and they've done nothing. So it's kind of disappointing there. Brewers, I think, are still the best team. The Cubs, I think they closed the gap pretty big this offseason.
Hey, Mike, how come nobody wants Toronto's money?
You know, I can't really explain that. I don't know if it's just they don't want to go to Canada. They don't want to go through customs every single road trip. I don't know, because Toronto's a great city. I mean, I enjoyed my time there every time I go. It's, you know, I really don't know. And they're trying. It's not a question of not being able to spend. Like, you know, you got Cal Steinbrenner and Tom Ricketts complaining about having to spend money. The Blue Jays are desperately trying to give their money away, and nobody wants to take it. And you look at the contract they had to give Santander, and that's a lot more than I thought he was going to get. And the deferrals do kind of make that ease the pain a little bit, but they had to overpay him to get him. And, you know, probably going to have to overpay Alonso if they're going to buy him away from the Mets. So I really don't know what it is, but, I mean, clearly this is something that it's kind of hamstringing them there. They're trying to get players to take their money, and just nobody wants it.
Maybe it's the Labatts. I don't know. It's Mike Exesa, CBSSports.com. Mike, appreciate the time. As always, enjoy the next couple of weeks because spring training will be here and we'll be pestering you quite often over the next 7-8 months here, hopefully.
Sure thing, guys.
You got it. Mike Exesa, CBSSports.com. Come back. It's the Whip Around. What happened in the world of sports last night? Well, some stuff, and we'll get into all of that historically as well. Stay tuned. Then Vinny's going to grade the Ravens individually. I'm guessing a lot of passing grades when you get to the playoffs. Win your division for the second consecutive year.
Vinny and Hades whip. brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
1057 The Fan.
Time for the whip around video at Haiti 1057 The Fan here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Want to pick a song? We'll play it. Favorite female artist or band? Send that request to the Plaza Ford text line at 410-583-1057 tonight on this radio station. Maryland 16-5, 6-4 in the Big Ten, taking on Wisconsin, number 17 in the country, 16-4, 6-3, Terps game behind. Maryland's won 3 in a row. Wisconsin's won 8 of 9, the only loss by 2 at UCLA. The Johns, Tanji and Blackwell are going to present problems for Maryland in the backcourt. And we're here from Kevin Willard later on in the program. Maryland's won 3 in a row, including 2 in a row on the road at Illinois. And then that thrilling victory against Indiana on Sunday. So we'll talk more about that as the show progresses. Frank Burleson, Hall of Fame basketball writer, joining us at 12:30. Talk about what's happening in the world of round ball. That SEC is pretty loaded. We'll get to that here in a second. But in the Big Ten last night, number 7, Michigan State, quietly putting together a monster year. 73-51 over Minnesota. And there was an upset by ranking anyway in the top 25 last night. Number 12, Kentucky beat number 8, Tennessee, 78-73. It was in Knoxville. So that's an eat-your-own league. Tennessee, they lose at Kentucky. They'll win at Florida. Kentucky will win at Tennessee. They'll lose at Auburn. So they're kind of beating each other up. And we'll talk more about that with Frank, of course, later in the show. In the NBA last night, it was Houston, 196 over Atlanta. Jalen Green, 25 for the Rockets. Cam Whitmore, Baltimore zone. Archbishop Spalding, Villanova, 2.6 boards and assists and a steal. The Wizards tonight, they are hosting Toronto. Washington, they've lost 14 in a row. They're one of the worst teams maybe in the history of the NBA. And Toronto's actually shown a pulse here as of late. Scotty Barnes and RJ Barrett, they've been kicking some ass here. But Emmanuel Quickley's banged up, so disadvantage there. But Washington's bad. Again, 14 in a row, buried at the bottom of the NBA standings. We talked about this yesterday, Major League Baseball. Paul Skeens, Gunnar Henderson, and Ellie Dela Cruz are on the cover of MLB The Show 2025. And Nolan, full disclosure, I haven't played a video game in over 20 years. And the only ones I did play, except for when I was a teenager playing like Galaga and Asteroids and stuff, I stopped. So are you still very much in on the Vigi games there? And the fact that Gunnar Henderson's on the cover, would that make you more inclined to buy it?
Maybe. I don't play The Show. I think you have to have a console to play it.
Oh.
I play more on PC, so I don't know. But good news is I don't think there's a curse for The Show cover like there is for the Madden cover, so we don't have to worry about that.
You sure about that?
Pretty sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Madden one, that's like everyone talks about that every year.
Now, are they like the Madden, the grades, like the players themselves lose their minds because they're like graded below what they think they should be? Is MLB The Show, even though, as you said, you don't play it, I mean, is that level of angst?
I don't know. The NFL takes everything to 1,000. I mean, I think they have Ocho Cinco determining player grades at one point. It's just a whole circus. I mean, just put out the game. That's it.
Also, in baseball news, this broke yesterday. Austin Hayes signs with the Reds. $5 million for 1 year. Dealt with kidney infection for most of the season. So he'll try to reestablish himself with Cincinnati. And Adam Frazier, another former Oriole, signs a one-year deal for $1.5 million with the Pittsburgh Pirates, where he was an all-star just a couple of years ago. Big fight coming up in Las Vegas on a Saturday night. Undefeated light heavyweights David Benavidez against David Morrell. Both big knockout guys. Benavidez 29-0, 24 KOs. Morrell 11-0, 9 knockouts. Morrell, a Cuban defector, he won his first title when he was in his third fight. So he's fast-tracking a big stuff. It's on Amazon Prime. We'll talk about that later in the week. In the NHL last night, Caps on the road, just kind of doing what they've been doing all season long, winning.
As the Capitals get it out, Protas may have a break. Alexei Protas is in. Forehand, he scores!
Joe Beninati on Monumental Sports with the call. Caps at Calgary take out the extinguish the Flames 3-1.
The Caps are playing really well, especially defensively. They gave their goalie Logan Thompson a new deal yesterday, 6 years, 35.8 million, I think it was, and deserves it. I think he's 23-2. on the season. Best goalie in the league right now. I mean, the Caps are 8-1-1 in their last 10, and they're a plus 55. They do not give up a lot of goals. I mean, that's the thing is, and Ovi hadn't been scoring. He's still 20 goals away from Gretzky, which they're projecting that he break it April 15th, right around at that time. But the Caps are playing good. They play Ottawa next in Ottawa, I think, on Thursday night. So it's going to be Ottawa's a decent team, but the Caps are on a roll and are hard to beat when you don't give up goals. And Logan Thompson in that first period gave up two breakaways they had on him. He stopped them both. It was spectacular if you saw it. It was really good hockey last night.
26-20-4 are the Senators. 7 o'clock puck drop tomorrow night. There, it's the Whip Around Video at Haiti 105.7 The Fan here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. College basketball, Maryland history, 1983. Cole Fieldhouse, Terps beat NC State, 86-81. Steve Rivers had 29. Ben Coleman had 21. Why is this significant? Well, NC State were going to win the national championship that year with Valvano, and Maryland beat them twice that year. Ben Coleman, by the way, Vinny, transfer from Minnesota. How about 2000? 25 years ago. Get the bleep out of here. Down in Tallahassee, 22nd ranked Maryland beat Florida State, 82-63. Lonnie Baxter at 29. Juan Dixon, Baltimore at 23. NFL draft on this date, January 29th, 1974. Ed Tootall Jones was the number one overall pick by the Dallas Cowboys out of Tennessee State.
Ed Tootall was a special dude, man, because he was like before his time how tall he was, and he was a hell of a player, a fun player to watch, too.
Interrupted his career to box. After 4 years, became a professional boxer. Then after getting punched in the face, he decided, I'll go back to football because I'm better at this. But listen to this, Steeler fans. Your 74 draft. Lynn Swann, number 21 overall out of USC. Jack Lambert in the second round out of Kent State. John Stallworth, fourth round out of Alabama A&M. And Mike Webster, fifth round out of Wisconsin. What do they all have in common?
Hall of Famers.
All in the Hall of Fame. All in the same draft class. All multiple time Super Bowl champions. So when they do these dopey lists of this, that, and the other, greatest draft classes of all time, that one usually lands on top, and rightfully so.
And they produced. They won a lot of games, too.
Yeah, and Swann and Stallworth kind of rode the bench their rookie year by Shanklin and Frank Lewis there. 1995, 30 years ago today in Miami, Steve Young throws 6 touchdown passes. Jerry Rice caught 3 of them. Ricky Waters scored 3 TDs himself. 49-26, the San Francisco 49ers, culminating a great season with a Super Bowl championship over the hapless, well, I don't say hapless, but overmatched San Diego Chargers, coached by Bobby Ross, Maryland, and his offensive coordinator, Ralph Friedgen, University of Maryland.
Oh, and we spanked them, and we spanked them 3 times that year. And I was standing on the sidelines during that game. It was rather fun, and the party after was really fun. And watching those guys score those touchdowns was rather enjoyable.
ABC on the call. Al Michaels, Frank Gifford, Dan Dierdorf on the call. National anthem. Remember that?
Yep. Frank Gifford's wife.
Kathy Lee Gifford. Halftime. Tony Bennett. Patti LaBelle. Aldo Sandoval and the Miami Sound Machine. That was your halftime entertainment. 83.4 million people watch that game. Now, if the Steelers would have won the AFC Championship game, they were upset by the Chargers. Ratings probably would have been much higher, and the game would have been a little closer. It would have been a demolition of epic proportions, but San Francisco probably still wins that matchup.
Yeah, the Super Bowl was the Dallas game, the NFC Championship game. That was the Super Bowl. Because the Chargers, yeah, they got upset, and we had spanked them. We beat them the first game in the preseason, we beat them, and then the last game of the season, we blew them out. So, yeah, it was, I think the point spread, it was, we were not worried, let's just say that.
That game was over at halftime, so sorry I missed Tony Bennett and Patti LaBelle. I was watching a Beavis Butthead at halftime on MTV. It's Vinny at 81.57. The Fan will come back. Ravens, unfortunately, didn't make the Super Bowl this year. Maybe next year. They should be loaded. We'll talk about that roster, how they performed in 2024. Chuck Pagano's coming back as a senior secondary coach. Funhouse trip. Nolan McGraw coming up at 11:45. If you want to get in, come on. Let's have some fun. Lamar Jackson, 119.6 quarterback rating, one of the best of all time. 41 touchdowns, 4 picks. Talking regular season, of course. 4,172 yards. He rushed for another 4 and another 915. So this dude, 5,000 yards of total offense. So I'm thinking by all regular season, by all measure, this was as good an NFL quarterback season we have seen in quite some time.
He was spectacular. He was spectacular. And I think it was 13 or 14 of the 17 games were over 100 quarterback rating, which is unheard of. In his other MVP seasons, I think the best he ever had was maybe 5 or 6. So the number of games, the thing was, and I think Todd talked about, Munkin talked about, or Harbst, consistency. He was consistent throughout the whole season, you know, and he got better. He improved upon the things that he needed to improve upon last year. We talked about it over and over and over. After last season, he needed to get better on the deep ball. We never even spoke about it this year, about throwing the ball too flat. Did a fabulous job doing that. And he lost the weight. Everybody wondered, how's it going to be with the weight loss? And even Todd Monken said he looked quicker, you know, is what he told me when we were out of training camp. So I just thought Lamar had a phenomenal season, stays healthy, knows when to get in out of bounds, knows when to take a hit, not take a hit. Threw the ball extremely well, ran the ball well, and I'm looking forward. I think he's going to even have a better year next year, just because Derrick Henry will be in year 2. Todd will be in year 3, along with most of the offense. Bateman had a good year. Bateman's going to even be better next year. I think all those guys are going to be better. They'll find more stuff to use likely with. They got Keaton Mitchell going to be 100%. I think Lamar's going to have a fabulous year. And every time that he has stayed healthy, every year that he has started, he's been in the MVP talk. So there's no reason, and they're going to be even, this may be the best team that they've had. So, you know, Lamar wins back-to-back this year. I think he could be like the Chiefs, and he'll be going for a three-peat.
Now, even in the playoffs, by the way, he completed almost 9 yards per attempt in 2024 during the regular season. His quarterback rating in the postseason was 122.5, 4 touchdowns, a pick. He did fumble, and they fell short of the goal. But this whole narrative, regular season Lamar versus playoff Lamar, his QB rating was actually higher in 2 playoff games than it was in the postseason,
yeah,
the regular season.
He stepped up in a playoff, and you could see it, you could feel it, that it was different. Plus, you could see it in his actions on the field. He was having fun, joking around again. You know, whereas before he was tight, tense, and he even said that. And I just think that because he's the conductor now, where he hadn't been the conductor in the playoffs before, I think that helps him because he kind of controls everything. He makes the checks, does all those things, you know, with the RPOs and with the zone reads. It's up to him whether he keeps it or whether he hands it. So I think his playoff run, I think it's going to be fine. I mean, who knows, you know, if Josh Allen, if they would have tied it, if he could have taken it down in a minute 30. He didn't against the Chiefs. So that would have been interesting to see. But I think the best is yet to come still for Lamar.
Now, running back, led by Derrick Henry, almost 2,000 yards. Justice Hill, Keaton Mitchell, as we talked about, he didn't come back till late. Started to look like Keaton Mitchell prior to the injury suffered last year. I mean, they rushed for, what, 3,100 yards? Is that correct? 3,189 yards as a team. And I'm guessing they did okay running the football, led by a guy that's probably Eddie Canton here.
Yeah, Derrick Henry was probably better than everybody. I mean, I questioned it when they first got him, you know, because I just didn't know, you know, from the shotgun, or, you know, would he be able to do the things that he needed to be able to do from that offense and be able to mesh with Lamar. But you could see it at OTAs and training camp, the quickness that he did have, much quicker than you would think for a 6'3", 250-pound guy. He had nifty feet. He had real good feet and powerful, strong, got better as the games went on. I mean, even caught the ball well out of the backfield. Pass blocking, when Justice was hurt, could be a little bit better, could stay a little bit more square. But overall, he was had a phenomenal, phenomenal season. And I think he'll even be better next year, even though he's 31, you know, for next season. But the way he takes care of himself, he's a young 31, I would say. And Justice Hill, I mean, that guy was kind of an unsung hero. He was phenomenal. I thought he was great. And he looked faster and more explosive in this last game than he looked all year. But he was good throughout. Made plays, had good bursts, understood his role. Kick return, third down back, excellent pass blocker, caught the ball out of the backfield well, made yak yards. I think he was second on the team in yak. Justice Hill had a phenomenal, great year, great year. And with Keaton Mitchell, I think we saw it the last couple games. It looked like he was kind of getting back to normal. I wish I would have asked Harbs when we were sitting there what percent he thought Keaton Mitchell was at the end of the year. But I think we're going to see a better Keaton Mitchell and a guy that they're going to have to find a role for. You know, it's hard to throw him in there at the end of the season when, you know, you're number one in offense, number one in all those rushing categories and everything else. And then, well, where are you going to put Keaton Mitchell? You don't really need Keaton Mitchell right now because of the level that Justice Hill was playing, but they'll have enough time in the offseason now to incorporate Keaton Mitchell, and Keaton Mitchell, you know, have his speed back and everything else. It's another weapon for them. And then Ali did a nice job in the kick returns, and then we'll see where he's at. He doesn't have the speed or explosiveness of the other three.
It's Fitty and Haney, 105, 7 the Fan, coming up top of the hour. News from the Nets. We get to the O-line, get to the receivers, get to the tight ends, and obviously move on to the defense as the show progresses. We'll count some dough, hopefully, 12-15 midweek style with buy or sell. Frank Burleson, Hall of Fame basketball writer, talking about college basketball. We're down to the final 10 games of regular seasons. The month of February starts on Saturday. That means March Madness right around the corner. Maryland tonight taking on Wisconsin. You're going to hear that game, 105.7 The Fan. We had Kevin Willard on yesterday. He'll join us again, 1:15, preview tonight's matchup and talk about his team. Kind of red hot right now. Bring Nolan in. Nolan, what's on your docket today?
Well, you know, the Super Bowl will be here before we know it, and that means all the circus that comes with it, media night, the commercials, all the other extracurriculars, the halftime show. But as far as the commercials, I mean, this has gone way, way overboard in recent years. They've always been the most expensive commercials you can produce. That's been known forever. But recent headlines here are already coming out that commercials for this upcoming Super Bowl, there's at least 10 in the mix that have paid $8 million just for their advertising time. Now, I don't know if that's 30 seconds for $8 million, a full minute for $8 million, but I mean, it seems like it wasn't long ago where it's, oh, $1 million. They paid $1 million for an ad. Now, oh, this is crazy. $1 million for 30 seconds on TV? That's crazy. Now here we are, $8 million. How much farther does this go? It's ridiculous.
How many times do you get to run it?
I think it's just the one.
Jesus.
There's limited space. Everyone's trying to get in there. It's insanity.
Yeah, then you anticipate them, and they wind up sucking half the time. By the way, Nolan, Super Bowl I, the cost of a 30-second commercial, this is back in 1967, 58 years ago, $42,000 on two networks because NBC and CBS both broadcast the game. And I was watching ESPN this morning. The betting, $20 million or whatever, made wagers on the Super Bowl in 2019. Upwards of 80 million people expected to place wagers on Super Bowl 59.
But in 1967, let me see, I was on Traveling Pee Wees. We could stop at a burger joint, Nolan, and I could get two burgers, large fry, and a Coke and get change back from $2.
Man, give me the time machine.
You can't get a water around here for $2.
Even the $40,000 ad, take me back. I'll take out the ad space for myself.
My parents would give me $2 for dinner.
There you go. That'll hold you over.
Yeah, but it's only going to go up, and you know people are willing to supply and demand. They're going to spend $8 million. What are you going to say? No, we don't want it. We'll charge you $5.
Oh, no, that's the way it is. And now you've got ads for the ads. You've been seeing some of them. I think the Chiefs are in every ad. Let's just be honest. I mean, you can't go an ad break in any sport these days without seeing Mahomes or Kelsey.
Andy Reid.
Snoop Dogg, too. I'm getting a little. He's everywhere.
I want Jake from State Farm. He's ubiquitous, as they say.
Derrick Henry was in there. That was nice.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a couple years ago, though.
Different team representation.
But either way, it's going to cost you some dough to advertise on the Super Bowl. Going to cost you some dough to watch that Super Bowl if you're just going to abstain from gambling. Of course, we're not encouraging anything, but we're not discouraging anything either. Tell you what we are encouraging, a trip to the Funhouse.
Quick Draws Funhouse.
Galloping all the way
The Rudeness Tuneness Text Reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
Speaking of the Super Bowl, Glenn in Hamden checking in says, when it comes to the Super Bowl, as a neutral observer, I just want a good story to root for. Unfortunately, with this matchup, I feel like I've heard everything there is to hear about Mahomes, Kelsey, Taylor Swift, even the Eagles versus their former coach, Andy Reid. That factor's getting old. Glenn says, I guess I'm rooting for Saquon Barkley, stuck on a bad team for years, gets out, enjoys instant success.
Yeah, it's kind of... I mean, because we've seen the Chiefs now. This is third year in a row, so we kind of get their act. So, yeah, I mean, you can only see Taylor Swift coming in, coming out. Who's she going to be sitting with this time cheering? With the Eagles? Yeah, I guess Saquon Barkley is kind of – you'd like to see him win because he seems like he's a really good dude.
Who's Jason Kelce rooting for?
Got to be the Eagles.
Eagles.
No brotherly love there?
No.
Coming from Philly?
Well, they played against him, 2 years ago?
Yeah. I'm sure he's still bitter about that.
Well, he's in a can't-lose situation now, retired.
Yeah. He's making money either way.
Jimmy in Pasadena, talking about baseball, the big contracts given out by the Dodgers, says they're deferring all the money just to avoid the luxury tax. They're buying championships. They deserve just as much blame for the bad state of baseball as the teams that don't spend at all.
Well, you know, like with the salary cap in football and stuff, you can't do that because everything gets prorated, you know, the guaranteed part of the money. So, baseball, the MLB union is too strong, and that's why it's never going to change. Only they would want to add the floor. If I'm the union, I'd want to add the floor because that's just going to make it better for the players.
And here's another aspect I don't think people take into account. If they were to implement a salary cap, it'll never happen. It's just it's too difficult to do. But now you'd have to probably get rid of arbitration. You'd have to, you know, eliminate that system and go and try to model more of an NBA or an NFL to try to fit the needs there. I mean, you can't have the current structure of arbitration and then tack on top of that. It would just be a complete mess.
In an arbitration, 99% of the time, the player wins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Orioles came to an agreement yesterday with Jorge Mateo. NBA's the one. It's crazy. I mean, they've got all these levels of exemptions. And I mean, that you'd need to have a degree in rocket science and brain surgery to figure that one out. Because they make a ton of dough. Less players, of course. But guaranteed money, no doubt about it.
And one more here. An Orioles tie-in, says Bill in Bayview, says rumor has it the Mets are sniffing around Ryan Mountcastle if they are to lose out on Pete Alonso. Any players over there that the Orioles would actually be interested in getting in return? I'm guessing he's asking major league talent because I don't think the Orioles would trade Mountcastle for prospects.
Yeah, they have any starting pitchers available that could slide right into the five? I know Seattle's been linked to Mountcastle as well because it looks like they're willing to move. You know, what's it, Luis Castillo and maybe Miller. And it looks like now San Diego, for whatever reason, Mike Cain could be available because he wants a ton of dough in arbitration. Same with Dylan Cease, who's in the walkie of a deal, by the way. But it's going to be an interesting scenario to see. I mean, is Elias stockpiling all of these players to possibly, you know, put together a pretty massive trade? But keep in mind, a lot of these guys he signed are on one-year deals, so... what's the benefit there? But Mountie's an attractive power bat, I guess.
Right. So it should be noted they're interested in Mountcastle, but they've also said that there are reports are interested in Torkelson from Detroit.
Yeah.
So to me, this, based on, combine that with what Mike Exesa said earlier, just seems like the Mets are trying to prod Alonso and say, hey, you better sign quickly because we'll replace you in a hurry.
It's Vinny at Haney, 105.7, the Fan. News from the Nats coming up top of the hour. Break down that Ravens offensive line, receivers, and tight end. Buy or sell at 12:15. And then Frank Burleson, Hall of Fame basketball writer, talk college hoops. As we're coming up on the end of January, the SEC is a beast, but how good is the Big Ten? Got some teams starting to percolate. Maryland, Wisconsin, who face off tonight? And how about Michigan State?